Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
How I found you was, I think I got turned on to the, this will all make sense full circle in a second. So I think I found you through when Micah used to do the Graylian Report before he renamed it. And this was probably 3 or 4 years ago. And Ryan Sprague was still on the show with you and Sam. And I remember the episode when Ryan broke off and was going to do Somewhere in the Skies. And, you know, so like you three are kind of like the trifecta of where I go for, you know, my different fixes. And I kind of like Ryan's very like to. I love Ryan's show, and he and I have talked a lot about this topic matter, about the whole ET UFO thing. He's the first person that I went to about it. I kind of went to you and him originally about my experiences, kind of just to see where I could go to look into this stuff a little bit more, because it's baffled me for a long time. Ryan approaches it from a very, like, I don't want to say skeptical, because that's, in my opinion, it's an overtly negative word ascribed to the phenomenon or anything that goes bump in the night, really. Like, anybody that says they're skeptical really means, the way I interpret it is, I don't believe it until I see it. Yeah, there's some people that are like that. But then there's the people, like, somebody would ask me, you know, do you believe in the existence of extraterrestrials and stuff like that? I'm like, well, I want to believe. And I've had some experiences that would lend me to think that they do. But the other side of that is, like, my rational mind goes, well, how do you know it wasn't? So, to kind of give you a little bit of background on myself, is I'm 37, grew up in the San Fernando Valley. There's two things that the valley is really known for. It's the 94 earthquake, and in this little place called Chatsworth, they're pretty much known for the adult film industry. So,
yeah, that's, so you know, their claim. I learn something fame every time I hop on here to record.
So, my dad is an actor, and he has been acting for since 1963 when he got out of the Navy. He was in the Navy from 59 to 63. He was on an aircraft carrier called the USS Kearsarge. They were part of the Pacific Fleet anti-submarine warfare kind of thing. So they chased Russian submarines during the, you know, the very beginnings of the Cold War and stuff like that. He grew up in LA. My mom grew up over in Los Feliz, which, if you're familiar with the geography at all, the big area over there is the Griffith Park Observatory, which, you know, it's kind of sandwiched right between Burbank and Glendale and Hollywood. So I've been here, you know, in Southern California, LA, my whole life. And my parents are pretty open-minded when it comes to things. And when this all started, it was really kind of interesting because one day I used to have a reoccurring dream when I was a kid of, oh, here's the one other thing. I was born on Halloween.
Oh, it's such a great birthday.
Yeah, so that may, and as my grandmother tells it, my grandmother was born the day after me, only 60 years earlier. She says that my first teeth to come in were my fangs. So she likes to joke with that. My wife rolls her eyes and says, there's no way to know that. I'm like, eh, it's possible. So I'm kind of the son of the artist, so to speak. And my wife is the one that is, she's the one that keeps me grounded, so to speak. So when I was a kid, I used to have this reoccurring dream about being chased by kind of like a terror dog from Ghostbusters, right? The dog would get me, it would start to attack me, I'd wake up. It didn't ever really freak me out. Okay, it's a bad dream. And even at young age, I kind of was like, well, this is the Zool dog from Ghostbusters. I mean, it's fake. I don't really need to be freaked out by it. Plus, I think it also had something to do with the creature in the Never Ending Story that chases Atreyu, and I can't remember what it was called, but the wolf bear thing I remember that thing was absolutely terrifying when I was a kid, especially where it's like he's the painting and then all of a sudden it's kind of like he's alive in the painting.
Such a great movie.
You know, just processing normal child psychology. Yeah. I think that's kind of like where it came from. So all of a sudden, probably when I was about 6 or 7 years old, those dreams stop and they're replaced by a recurring nightmare that would play out something like this. I would be in my room in my house, my childhood, room, playing with my trains or my toys or whatever. All of a sudden the lights would go out. Sometimes I'd be alone in my room. Sometimes I would be standing in another part of the house with my family. And keep in mind, these are all dreams. Okay, so this is the weirdness of the phenomena that I experienced, which I haven't ever really heard anybody talk about in any part of the ET UFO thing, was the dream. So, also when I was, 6 or 7 years old, I'm in first grade, I'm dyslexic. My parents had me tested for that when I was a kid. I went through all the psychological testing that they do because some of the schools, when I was a kid getting ready to go into them, they say, hey, your son might have ADD or something because he can't sit still. Like a thing with my generation, every kid had ADD. However, in this case, this was a legit thing. Like I remember very specifically how I was before and after I was put on medication. So, I mean, I was on Ritalin from the time that I was about 7. It was adjusted throughout, the years and stuff like that. So right around that time, and this is where the question goes, I'm like, was this something that I was a memory that it was playing out in a dream, or was this a side effect of the Ritalin that I was taking? I don't know. I've done a little bit of research very superficially on if there were any kind of weird dreams that were associated with kids taking Ritalin, but there's really not a whole lot out there because not only that, that topic's become extremely controversial, but there's also just not a lot about that because any kind of study that involves minors, there's quite a lot of legal stuff that has to go through with it, even to have it put right. out. So back to this reoccurring dream, this dream would consist of, I'd be in my house with my family, usually in my room by myself, when all of a sudden things would go black, meaning the lights would shut off. And all of a sudden I would be feeling like there was another presence in the room. Sometimes they would appear. I wouldn't really see them, but I could feel them and I know where they were there. And as right before they would touch me, I'd wake up. And these freaked me out. And when I first started having them, I really didn't know what the heck these things were in the dreams until I saw the cover of Communion. And all of a sudden, the things that were in my dreams had a face. And I remember that night very distinctly. I was sitting in my dad's station wagon in the front seat, holding this VHS cassette that he got from the liquor, that him and my mom had rented it. And I just, you know, the picture of the movie poster of the Manhattan skyline with the big eyes and the alien's face kind of faded into the background. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, they're real. Like, what the heck is this? Like, as a 7 year old would, you know, 7 year old say, is not going to say, what the hell are these things and what are they doing? It was like, wait a second, this isn't just a dream. Like, what the heck is going on? So this scenario occurred at random times, multiple times a month, sometimes on consecutive nights, sometimes months apart. And it would never happen when I was either having a sleepover at a friend's house or somebody was sleeping in my room or something like that. And, you know, I told my parents about what's going on because you're a little kid, you have a bad dream, you go into their room and sleep with them until you're ready to go back to sleep. And, you know, my parents were, if they were concerned about what was going on, and they probably were, I mean, your son keeps having these repetitive dreams. I mean, Shannon, it was so frightening that when they really got going, like after years of these dreams already happening, and these happened from probably about the time I was about 6 to 7 years old to about 13 or 14 years old. So right before high school, I mean, they petered off a lot in middle school, but they were going on every now and then. But we can talk about that part later. I mean, ETs and UFOs became more of the mainstream at that point in time, especially with things like the X-Files coming about. My dad was on an episode in season 4 called Small Potatoes. Mm-hmm. So that kind of took away some of the stuff mm-hmm. for it. The kind of the fear behind it, and you know, also being kind of like a dorky kid. Like, I mean, I'm built now. I'm 6 foot and 235 pounds. I played hockey growing up. Like, it, you know, I wasn't like your stereotypical geeky kid, but you know, I was into things like model trains and camping, and you know, loved going to SeaWorld to see Shamu and stuff like that. So, I mean, there was always this like sensitivity that I had about other living things, and these dreams absolutely terrified me to the point where I trained myself to sleep on one side of my body facing the wall. So if something was coming in to get me, I wouldn't open my eyes and see them staring at me, because that would honestly just kind of, that would be enough, done, enough. I couldn't sleep with the door open. I couldn't sleep with the door closed, and I had to sleep with a baseball bat and the light on, and not just like a lamp. Like, I had to have the light on in my room. Like, wasn't going to go to sleep without it. And, you know, those dreams reoccurred for years. And, you know, they all kind of came to a head when, I think it was like 93, 94. No, it was after the Northridge earthquake, which was in 1994. We had a big earthquake out here that was, it was pretty devastating. Flattened parking structures, you know, killed people, streets blew up, earthquakes, you know, collapsed the freeway, stuff like that. In fact, when the earthquake first hit at 4:30 in the morning and it woke me up, I thought, you know, it was a,
they were
the
finally coming were like, for you. Yeah, they were taking, I remember that time. That's terrible.
Yeah, I literally was like, oh shit, it's freaking happening. That's terrible. You know, and then I realized, oh wait, it's just an earthquake. You know, and before that, my parents had, you know, been in watching the X-Files, and I couldn't be in anywhere near that. Like, I remember I'd sit down and try to like watch certain things. But, you know, I remember specifically the Dwayne Barry episode, like at the very end where the aliens are peering in through the hospital, like sheet thing, that's the separation or the partition in his house where it's plastic and they're like surrounding him. And I'm like, no, can't do it. I'm not going to be able to sleep. F this. So these dreams went on for years, and, you know, we took a family vacation to Sedona, Arizona in 94. And at that point I had known, you know, in kind of hearing things, and I think my parents, the way that they had tried to rationalize this, or at least try to take away the taboo and the fear that was being associated with it, was, is they, you know, like I said, they're always pretty open-minded people. You know, they would talk about it with me. You know, my dad would share things that he read about sightings where, you know, somebody saw a ship that they estimated to be a mile long. And, you know, I remember one specific, my dad said, well, Jason, if you see these things in your dream, put your hands together like a triangle, and this will tell them that, you know, you're okay, that, you know, anything like that. Well, I tried that in the dream, didn't really work. And, you know, I remember we took this trip to Sedona, to Arizona in general. I mean, we started in Prescott, which was cool. Then we went up to Sedona, and I was so stressed out for the entire trip in Sedona because we were going to Flagstaff after that. Sedona's a known hot spot for all things that just are weird, you know. There's the big rock out there where, you know, they used to say the vortex was, and, you know, who knows. My brother and I both got lice when we were there. We got it from Little League, but that was kind of like when they were discovered. So, I mean, there's a lot of, like, semi-traumatic things associated with being in that city, which is unfortunate because it's a beautiful place. You know, obviously the whole Travis Walton story, was something that was at the forefront of my mind the entire time we were there. Because that took place in Northern Arizona. I can't remember the exact geography, closer to Flagstaff than to Sedona, but, you know, Sedona had the reputation. So that entire trip, I was super stressed out. When we got to Flagstaff, it was a little bit better because, you know, being the train geek that I was when I was a kid, like, trains go to Flagstaff like every 20 minutes. So I was like, F the aliens. The trains are right here. The trains will hit the aliens, you know, whatever. So that was kind of 1994. The things kind of crescendoed at that point. We had a neighbor that was living with us that he had two boys that were, you know, he had two sons, and they were a couple years younger than my brother and I. I'm the oldest of two. He said he was an experiencer himself. And there was a certain incident where everything really came to a head, where one night, and ironically enough, and this could be ascribed to an overactive imagination when we get there, but we had been over at a barbecue at a friend's house, and Close Encounters of the Third Kind had come on. Well, something very bizarre later that night happened. I had been awoken in the middle of the night, and I didn't have a bad dream, but I had a weird feeling, like, I just, something's not right. And I went to my parents' room, which was right across the hall, and I, you know, said, hey, I had a bad dream. So I go and, you know, cuddle up, and hear something walk down the hallway. Just like the normal footsteps, but like somebody's barefoot, you know? And we had hardwood floors in the hallway at that time, and it was the summer. So things would have been, you know, you get a little bit of a sound of somebody walking a hardwood floor sometimes. So this thing walks, it stops at the door and taps on the door to my parents' room. And my dad says, Kevin, go back to bed. Well, I looked up and there was nothing standing in the door. And I'm like, okay, this is weird. So I fade off to sleep. Eventually, you know, I go back to my room. And so we're talking about it the next morning. And my dad tells me, he goes, yeah, that was weird. I thought Kevin had, you know, was tapping on the door. So the, Kevin's my brother, tapping on the door and wanting to be let in, you know, but you were here, nothing was there. He goes, yeah, but what I didn't tell you, Jay, is, like, before I put you back to bed, I heard it walk into your room, and then I heard your waterbed swish. And I lost my shit. Like, I was like, wait a second, the dreams aren't just dreams. Like, what's going on here? Like, somebody please fathom this for me. Like, I'm not grasping this. I'm 11 or 12 or 94. Yeah, I'm like 11 years old. I was born in 83. I'm 11 years old. What just happened last night. Like, are you telling me these things were in the house? And then my mom says something about, hey, wasn't that one time where my grandmother, who lives in San Diego, she's since passed. She passed in 2009. All sorts of weird stuff used to happen around her. And we'll transition to that in a little bit. She said there was a time where she saw a naked kid, what she thought was a kid, running around the house. And I put two and two together. She goes, well, yeah, I couldn't really tell if it was a kid, but it was about the height of a kid, you know, like 4.5 feet, 5 feet tall. And I was like, oh no, they're real. And I called her and asked her about it. And she said straight up, she said, yeah, I'd seen it a couple of times. I just didn't ever think anything of it. You know, that I've seen these, I've had weird stuff happen to me all the time, she says. So I'm like, oh, brother. So we go off to summer camp. And I remember that entire day, I just felt as if everything was, it was the weirdest thing in the world. It felt like everything was movie sets and facades. It was like something had been pulled off a sense of my perception. And I felt just like a shell, like going through the motions. And so like the entire day, I couldn't really wait to get home because the neighbor and the father of the kids of the neighbor who had said he was an experiencer would be able to kind of explain and say, hey, yeah, he goes, yeah, we for sure, somebody was here last night for us too. And I'm going, what, huh? He goes, and it was like, Shannon, when I kid you not, like he was an artist and he would rebuild and fix race cars for millionaires, right? And this is a little like middle class neighborhood in Winnetka, California. And these houses were 1600 square foot houses. They're not big houses. We're not like millionaires living in Beverly Hills. We had a good life, but we weren't like, you know, stupid rich or anything like that. We were working blue class, you know, blue collar individuals. You know, my dad was an actor, my mom worked in sales, you know. I went to public school. It wasn't like we were in this like super rich life or anything like that. But when I got home from camp that day, I walked up the driveway and I go, the neighbor's dad, his name was Matt. I said, Matt, he just looked at me. He goes, I know. I said, how do you know? My mom told you what happened? No, I got a phone call from Bonnie, who was a friend of theirs that was also a psychic. I had some interactions with her, but didn't really know too much. And she gave me a heads up around 2 o'clock in the morning that there was a ship heading my way. And he said, you had one in your house and we had one here. And I caught the guy. I caught him kind of walking around the house. And I said, hey, get out of here. He kind of turned around, opened his mouth, and made this inaudible noise like he was going to talk. And he ran around the corner and then disappeared. And that was it. And I was like, okay, next time I see one of these things, that's it. It's on. Like, I'm done being afraid. I'm done with them bothering me.
And
I'm
we are presuming done. That this was going on at so the some, exact same time in his house and your house. Oh.
Yeah. I find it so, and if it wasn't going on at the same time, it was going on either at his place and then my place or my place and then his place mm-hmm. or simultaneously. But it's so bizarre that I'm having these dreams and then somebody moves in next door who has had these experiences and said that these things have been taking his kids or very interested in his kids and in him and right next door. I mean, when do you find two experiencers living next door to each other? Maybe you have before, other than like some mass sighting, like the Phoenix Lights or something like that. But how is it that two people end up next door? Either one's a pathological liar and saying things just because he wants to fuck with the kid, or he's being legit.
So the dad was saying that he was even saying the kids are being taken. So that plural kids, there was two kids.
Yeah. So he had two boys and his oldest son, was, I think he was 4 or 5 years younger than I was. No, he wasn't that old. So if I was 11, he was a couple grades. I was in middle school. I think he was probably in second or third grade. So yeah, maybe like 4 years younger than me. My brother's about a year and a half younger than I am. And then the other kid next door, he had a 3-year-old brother. And he said the kids, he never said that they were taken. He used it like they were more like they were interested in them. Like they would come and check them out. Like just doing weird shit, like coming and standing over them in their rooms and observing and stuff like that. The father, who his name was Matt, he said he was the one that had been taken on several occasions. Now, I never had a conscious experience of being taken. I never so much as saw anything more than from time to time a UFO, but that was usually way off in the distance, a gold circle floating in the sky, and usually it was pointed out by my dad. You know, and that happened a couple times, but the stuff that did, I mean, there was one time where the neighbor that lived across the street said that they woke up at, you know, 12 o'clock in the morning and the sky outside was red. And I wasn't there for that. There was another time that they saw like an object hovering over the mountains north of us, just kind of doing weird shit, like moving in circles, and then all of a sudden it'd zip off and disappear, you know. And then my mom had to go to Sedona years later on a business trip and was part of a mass sighting there where this object that they saw up in the sky with her and about 10 other people, they'd say, hey, do like think of it doing circles, and it would do circles. So like there's all this like circumstantial anecdotal stuff that's going there, and it's just all of a sudden it's becoming very real, and it's huge in pop culture. I mean, you've got the X-Files and the gray alien faces everywhere, which I think ultimately kind of helped me like process through this stuff a little bit. And then kind of the final dream that I had, which I mean, I call it final because they tapered off pretty significantly after then, because, you know, I was 14, 15 years old. I was becoming a little bit more aware of what was going on, not only with myself in the world, but the world in general. So I guess that maybe the naivety of childhood wore off or whatnot. So in this dream, this was very, very interesting. And this was kind of something that, you know, the human psyche will automatically say, you need to fear something if you don't know what it is, because that's how we've evolved as a species. So in particular, in this last dream, I'm standing in the hallway. My mom is in the bathroom, which is directly off my right. And this gray walks out of my bedroom. Okay, keep in mind, this is a dream. This gray walks out of my bedroom. And up until this point, whenever they had touched me in a dream, and by touch me, like grabbing my arm or something, there's nothing weird about them touching me. The feeling that I would get in the dream was like almost like a feeling of being electrocuted. You know, you get electrocuted and your body kind of feels like it's like a wet noodle almost. So in this dream, I see this gray walk out of my room and walk up towards me, and I swing at it and I hit it and I bust its eye open, and whatever it was, it bled on me. And it was kind of this weird grayish green slime. And I remember I stopped, and I'm like thinking at first, I'm like, yeah, I really taught this thing. Like, yeah, this is what's going to happen if you guys keep coming after me. But after that went away, I looked at the gray, and I felt really, really bad for hurting it. And not only did I feel really, really bad about it, but it was like I could feel its pain. And at that moment, I kind of realized that I think my mind has been putting a little bit too much fear on this subject matter, so to speak. And the dreams pretty much tapered off after that. I mean, every now and then, still to this day, I'll have a little bit of a weird dream like that, but it's usually, you know, something that's more along the lines of, you know, your typical, like sleep paralysis episode where you wake up, or you're having like I forget the term that they use for like a waking dream where you feel like you're falling down through your body and stuff like that, or you hear a voice or whatnot. And every now and then I'll get creeped out, and sometimes I'll have one that's creepy enough where I'll need to go into my daughter's room and check out and see if everything's cool. So, you know, I filter that stuff away, and this isn't really a subject matter that I had shared with too many people, because I mean, quite honestly, there's a lot of people that could be believers. I mean, living in, you know, as they call it, woo-woo Southern California or whatever. But you get out of your immediate circle, and people that haven't had experiences look at you kind of like you're nuts, you know. And so I just really kind of only kept it close to the vest. The only experiences that I really cared to share with people were my experiences with the non-living, so to speak, the ghosts. Which, you know, even when I hear these stories on the podcast of people having, you know, experiences across multiple mediums, my rational brain is kind of like, what the heck? But it's interesting because I remember your episodes about the missile technician and some things that he said about, well, I would never have these experiences when mm-hmm. I was with other people or if I was on the boat. It was always when I was by myself. And I'm like, that was the first time that I had ever heard of somebody having an experience similar to my own. And honestly, what he was saying, like, I get exactly what he would say, because he was like hesitant to say, like, I don't want to say it's aliens, kind of like the Giorgio Tsoukalos thing, where it's like, I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens, you know, because in his line of work, he's absolutely correct. Like, if you in any instance show that you may be kind of mentally unstable with something, it's going to screw a lot of things up. And so that particular episode was the first time where I was like, okay, there's something else going on here. Cause he almost broke it down the exact same way that I did. Like, I'm having these experiences, but they're dreams and I can't remember if they're conscious or anything like that. And so, you know, I never woke up with weird marks on my body. I would get nosebleeds when I was a kid, but what kid doesn't? You know, I'd get them as an adult, but it was usually because, you know, I'd write it off to my window being open at night, which was a true thing. And, you know, being rational, that's probably what happened. But I realized at that point when I heard that episode, and this is kind of why, you know, I've been coming to you and Ryan and kind of was like, hey, there's something else going here. And Ryan is very busy and he's got a lot going on with his plate. And Ryan and I talk about other things too, other than just the UFO thing. You know, he and I are very close in age. So, I mean, there's a lot of common ground. We'll talk about music. We'll talk about, you know, societal issues, movies, crap like that. The thing about your show, Shannon, that I gravitate towards is there's really no topic that's out of bounds for you. And when you guys say you're really into the fray, like, that's what I like about it. And then there's the Bigfoot stuff, which is really awesome, which we can talk about later. We can kind of go into it now if you want. So what do you want to hear about next? Ghosts? Or
I've actually got some questions, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Yeah, fire away.
You called them at first recurring dreams, like the devil dogs from Ghostbusters, and then they turned into recurring nightmares. And you said you were about 6 or 7 years old when they turned from dreams into nightmares. That was prior to you seeing Communion movie stuff, book stuff, and the cover. So, but do you recall anything? And of course, it's a long time ago. I don't really remember a whole lot from that point of time in my life either. But, you know, could there have been some influences that may have caused those nightmares prior to you being introduced to Communion artwork?
Absolutely. And this is some of the own psychotherapy that I kind of did on my own with this. And so from the time that I was really little, like I said, you know, my parents were really open-minded with this. And my mom and dad had a friend that was a psychic. She said she was, and kind of like a healer and maybe a medium. But from what I was told was I always had a lot of activity around me, be it from this world or from not. And this was not told to me until years later when I was a teenager. So what I figured out was this. And I think this really is kind of what's going on. I think as human beings, we're all born with our third eye open. I think it is wide open, and I think we are totally fine with it being that way as children until something happens where it literally freaks us out. We close it off, and anything that even resembles that is given the fear category in our subconscious. So what I figured out was, and again, like it all started to make sense. I think that I was being visited when I was a young kid. I don't think I was ever in any harm's way. And I think what happened was, if you'll remember the movie Cocoon, and you remember how the ETs were in that, there were these beautiful, luminous white beings that were kind of just like bouncing off the walls, literally, and having fun, and they were ethereal and they were beautiful. But if you remember what they looked like when they were taken out of the cocoon, and they were all gray and shriveled up with big eyes, and they went from looking completely opposite to how they were to how they were when they're dying. And so I finally went, I think I connected the dots. And I said, I think I was being visited. And I think these things were my friends. Or at least, you know, a kid will rationalize, hey, you're checking me out and hanging out. Yeah, you're my friend. I have no memories of any of this. This is just kind of like stuff that I've kind of figured out through the years. You know, hey, it seems to make sense. I see the movie and like, oh, my friends are in the movie. And then I see the movie, them dying at the end of the movie. And I'm like, oh my God, this is literally like a newborn kid or a 2 or 3 year old's first experience in learning about what death is. And it freaked me out and made me so sad that I wanted nothing to do with it. And I put it in the fear category in the subconscious. Until I was 6 or 7 years old, when something, they decided to check me out again. And that is what was happening. And either they were real events that were happening consciously that I had suppressed and put into the back of my mind, or they were contacting me through like an elaborate kind of dreamscape kind of thing. And that's what was going on. And because my mind was so freaked out by it, like there was really nothing that could be done. Like I had to go through this process of the realization myself or something like that. That's where I think that fear came from, was that particular scene at the end. I think it's either Cocoon, and I can't remember if it happens in Cocoon 1 or Cocoon 2. But somebody ends up with one of those cocoons and they cut it open and the alien starts to die and it turns gray. And that was really like, I mean, a little kid loses something that they really cherish. Like they're going to be afraid of that, whatever happens to it. And I think that could be it. I really think that's where it could be. And that gives a lot of credence to how powerful our conscious mind is over our subconscious when we're awake. If it's something that we can't answer, we put the fear label to it and we're told, leave it alone, don't deal with it. And I think that's kind of what was going on there. So, and it makes sense. So when I hit this one in the kind of one of the last dreams, I felt really bad about it. And it makes sense. It kind of just ties everything together with that. So, you know, hopefully that was the answer to your question.
No, that was a fantastic answer. Incredible description, actually, of the whole thing. No, I was actually really mesmerized by that. But so so going off your memories of these things, there wasn't much far as actually seeing
No.
them. And
right. I mean, I never saw them when I was awake. It was always in my dreams.
And then this final dream, I mean, you finally not only see one, but you deck one and you injure it. And so that just big time ties into what you just said, your theory.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of like the last thing for the most part. You said there's little things that come up, but
Yeah, I mean, I'll have every now and then where it's like they're more Hollywood-esque type dreams. Every now and then one will kind of like be a little bit like they'll be a little bit more nefarious than they were, or nefarious than they are now. They'll be a little bit more, you know, kind of your stereotypical, I don't like to use the word abduction, but I mean, that's what, you know, go with the nomenclature, right? More of your standard abduction experience where they're coming into your house to go after you and stuff like that. And, you know, I kind of just filed it away. I mean, I told my wife that I had these dreams and she goes, you know, just be careful when the baby's born and what we expose her to, because, you know, I don't want her to have these kinds of nightmares. I said, I mean, I'll do my best, but if she starts having them, that's going to be kind of a game changer for me.
Yeah, that's something I have written down. Are you slightly worried about that?
Worried isn't the word that I would use. I'm not afraid of it happening because I'm almost expecting it to, that if it doesn't, I'd be disappointed. Because it's like, it's on one hand, it's kind of like validation, right, for my own experiences. But on the other hand, then it's like, if my daughter's going to be freaked out by this stuff, like, I almost don't want her to experience it. I mean, but if she does, then I'm the perfect person to kind of say, like, look, this is what's going on. Okay.
You're facing a wall with a baseball bat, mm-hmm, and all the lights on. I mean, that's a horrifying way, mm-hmm, to have to even attempt to go to sleep. When you're little.
Shannon. Yeah, no, absolutely. And like, and this was until like preteens, like after the earthquake in 94, like my brother slept in my room for a while afterwards, just because, so his bedroom was down at the opposite end of the house from my mom, my dad and I, our bedrooms were right across the hall from each other. And my brother's was at the other end of the house. And you know, so Kevin slept in my room for a while, and that was the best sleep I ever had because I never was bothered when he was in there. And so in 93, 94, when this stuff really started to pick up and it really started to crescendo, I used to, Kevin, can you please sleep in my room tonight? Please sleep in my room tonight. Because I know that nothing would happen if he was in there.
Did he have any experiences himself?
So not with ETs. He had experiences with seeing my deceased great grandmother, in the house, reading a deck of cards. Now that is, there's some really wacky, not wacky, but there's some real wild stuff that goes with my great grandmother and her daughter, my grandmother, and my brother and I, which we can get to on the next part.
Right.
I just want to make sure I get all your
questions.
Yeah,
no, thank you. I appreciate that. What about any poltergeist type activity in the home? Because obviously you listen to a lot of podcasts. We've all heard it before. Sometimes when the mm-hmm. ET stuff is going down, people will report poltergeist activity.
So when I was a kid, not so much. Now that I'm an adult, so we live in a condo in Woodland Hills, which is a suburb of LA. We're on the top floor of a three-story condo complex. My wife's father passed away in 2011. There's a lot of transient energy that comes through this place. A lot of transient energy. And I have seen things get knocked off the shelves. I have seen people, shadows move in this place. I have seen them, especially around the time that my daughter was born, which would make sense. I mean, you know, I think I have some relatives that come to check in from time to time. And I think my wife does as well. I mean, the poltergeist stuff, yeah, it's happened. It's happened here. It's happened at my childhood home, not directly with me being in the room, more like with my mom, and dad and my brother. And it's happened from time to time at the house that my mom and my stepdad and my brother live out now, out in Simi Valley. There's always weird shit that goes bump in the night, always. And those are kind of the weirdest dreams that I have now, Shannon. It's like, trying to think if it's like the best way is I kind of have this reoccurring scenario, and they don't really freak, these dreams don't really freak me out. But you know, you kind of see some of the movies where, especially in the, they like to do roles like this in the movies about like demonic possession, where like the priest is in there and he's like yelling at the person that's possessed. And there's this really forceful, powerful entity and you feel the energy of it. And it's like, I'll have these dreams sometimes where I'm in a room somewhere with people and there's this entity just going crazy. And I'm like egging this to come on, that's the best you can do, you know? And yeah, then they kind of own me. Nothing bad really happens in the dream, but you know, it's just kind of weird stuff like that sometimes where when I was the transition with this that I guess I can make with this now. When I was 19, I asked my mom to put me through a guided meditation that would reopen my third eye. My grandfather had been gone for about a year at that point. He passed away due to leukemia at age 82 after battling a blood disease called myelodysplasia, which he was diagnosed with 4 or 5 years earlier. That was a result of his exposure to certain petrochemicals when he worked in the aerospace industry, particularly things like benzene and all that crap. So I was real close with him, and he was a great guy. I mean, I was real lucky to have grandparents around.
Jason, sorry to interrupt you. Are you transitioning to the ghost stuff now?
We can.
That's okay. I actually still wanted to stay on the ET stuff real quick because I still have more questions. I didn't want to interrupt you. I just didn't want to kind of go back and forth because, you know, people like when we stay on one little thing.
No,
you're fine. No, you're an awesome guest. I appreciate you doing this. Okay. Let me see here. Okay. Going to... Mm-hmm. Because you're talking about your grandfather and you talk about your grandma, your great grandma, mm-hmm. She had stuff going on. It sounds like everybody does. And it's still in the arena here with what you were just trying to go to. I'm sorry for interrupting you, but
no,
you hear also about blood types possibly being a theory in as why it could run in a family or what's going on there. Do you happen to know your blood type or anybody's blood type in your family?
So I'm B positive. My grandmother on my maternal side is B positive also. My wife is AB positive, which would mean my daughter is going to be something positive. She's either going to be B positive or AB positive. My mother-in-law is B positive. I don't know my dad's blood type. My brother is either going to be B negative or B positive because my mom is B negative. Okay. Now that I think about it, that's really weird. I'm B positive. My mom's B negative, but my grandmother, her mom, who she's kind of out there too. She's from Australia and she's like into Edgar Gacy and all that stuff. Like she's like, yeah, it's all real. but she wasn't the grandmother that had the experiences. That's on my dad's side. And she passed in 2009, and I don't know her blood type. I don't know my dad's blood type, but I had heard the thing about blood types being a possible link. Never really, like I had heard it and never really thought much about it. So that would be an interesting thing. And it would make sense, in my opinion, because, you know, they tell you there's certain blood types. We'll use the, the BRCA gene? That's in, like, causes breast cancer in a lot of Jewish women. I think it causes a lot of breast cancer in a lot of women in general. So that gene was isolated. I think they figured that out, like, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago, that there's a specific gene that you can be tested for that, you know, when you test positive for it, usually 75% of the time, the people that are carriers of that gene are going to develop breast cancer. My great grandmother on my dad's side, the one that my brother saw playing cards as an apparition, died of breast cancer the second time it came back. And she was of Jewish descent from, she was born in London, but she was of German and Dutch background. And then her husband, my great grandfather, who fought in World War I on horseback, was born in Romania.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And so now all the weirdness kind of seems to make sense. And what it came out to be was when my brother saw this ghost of my grandmother in the living room playing cards, my brother goes, "Mom, who's the gray-haired lady with the deck of cards?" And my mom stops and goes, "What was she doing with the cards? Was she doing X, Y, and Z? Was she doing?" And he goes, very specifically, and I thought he was full of shit at the time because I was like, I'm the only one that's having weird stuff happen to him in the family. Now I look back at it and I'm like, okay, maybe I'm not, and this is good news. Because my brother and I actually had co-experiences with craziness later on, which we'll get to, because that story is like something straight out of like Ghostbusters practically. So my brother says, no, she's pulling the cards, she's laying them down, and she's reading them. And my mom goes, well, that was your great-grandmother, and she was reading the deck of cards. So comes to find out that my great-grandmother was very in tune. So much in tune to the point where my mom wanted to be taught by her how to do some of these things, and she flat out refused.
Now, why is that?
So I have my theories, and then I have the stories that my dad's cousins have told me.
Maybe she was just trying to protect her?
I think she saw things that she didn't want to see, including her own death and perhaps the death of several other people close to the family. So it would kind of make sense why a lot of this stuff with the ghosts and everything circled around my grandmother, which was her daughter. And, you know, my Romanian great-grandfather, you know, that it kind of all starts to paint a picture. And so the blood type, yeah, I mean, there could be something there, Shannon, that I actually would be very curious to see what's going on.
Well, and the other part of that is too, is something that David Politis has brought up in his Missing 411. I think it's kind of a new thing, you know where I'm going with this, is that people of a certain descent, like I think he was on the vein of the German descent kind of a thing, but you know, why can't there be other descents that have other things that are kind of looking at them a little bit more because of that? Is, you know, it's just a theory, it's always just theories, but it's an interesting one.
Yeah, David Politis was just, I heard, just, was it on your show that I was listening to the most recent episode where somebody related to him passed away?
Yeah, his son.
Yeah. That's what it was. Okay.
Yeah, his son did, unfortunately.
That is, I know what that does to a dad. My brother had lost a baby when his baby was 6 weeks old, and I know what that does at any age.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
And that,
I can't.
Yeah, I just know that if something were to happen to Kaylee at any age, if it's done at the hands of somebody else, like, they've got another thing coming. Like, I woke up my first Father's Day crying because I had a dream that she had died. My wife is like, what is going on? And I was like, Shannon, not just like a little cry, but like full on ugly cry, like grown man
Ugly cry.
Like, wailing, you know? And she's like, well, it's okay, because she's just right there. And, you know, I get up 3 or 4 times in the middle of the night just to go see her. Just to make sure she's okay. No, you know, overprotective, whatever.
Yeah, we all are. Don't even
worry
about
that.
That's
my baby, you know?
Yeah, that's the ultimate nightmare. And definitely thoughts go out to David and his entire family. That's just it's an unimaginable situation for him.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. More questions. And you, no unusual marks on the body. You already covered that. It's tough because you're saying that for the most part, and this is another, the whole thing is a big question rolled into like a long sentence, but you're having dreams and you're saying they're dreams, but then you kind of are hinting that you're definitely thinking that at least when you were younger, they were coming. But do you feel like, first part is, do you feel like you had missing time ever when you were fully awake, you knew you're awake, and do you feel like you were being ever been taken, or you were just being visited?
I don't ever think I was being taken. I feel like I was being visited. Missing time, I never had the missing time experience, but my dad did. But he was also in the desert and it was the 60s. So there's enough to fill in those gaps.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'll get to some of this stuff. Like, I mean, I'll be straightforward. Like I told you, like, I was 7 years old and I was taking Ritalin. I mean, that is a very powerful psychotropic substance for anybody. And it's very real that this was something that was triggered by that, or that opened up a different part of my brain to it. Because from the time I was 18 to 30, I was completely off. I'm going to say off my meds, but it's not like it was, I'm not, you know, I don't have any other mental illness. I'm, you know, ADHD, you know, and I'm dyslexic and, you know, a little bit color deficient, but you know, that's most people are, or at least most guys are. The interesting thing about the missing time is a lot of this stuff, had it happened when I was younger, would have absolutely terrified me. Like the day that they were in the house, or the night that they were in the house, and then the neighbor had the same thing going on, it was like, it wrecked my world. It was like, what, nothing I am doing right now makes any sense until I have answers about what just happened. So I don't ever think there was anything malicious about what was going on. Now, keep in mind, like, part of me wants this to be an actual visitation, and part of me is still very much like, I think it could have been made up, but I don't know. So that's why I say, hey, I want to believe, because there's literally this kind of back and forth in my mind about this, what I believe versus what I can prove.
You said something interesting. Oh,
the thing
sorry.
Is,
no, go ahead.
Yeah, and I can only prove what I believe from the experiences of other people that are close to me that have, or people that I have known that have experienced these things. Does
Absolutely.
That make sense?
No, and I appreciate that. That is a great way to approach any of this stuff. I don't care what subject it is. You brought up Ritalin.
Yeah.
And it is an interesting thing because, you know, is it a side effect of the Ritalin, right? Mm-hmm. Is it artifacts that it's creating and, you know, all of these things? Or is it, does the Ritalin act as an aid to open your mind?
Right.
Similar to what, you know, if you take DMT, dimethyltryptamine could do, right? People go on these DMT trips all the time and they say that it does tap into a different part of your brain. It allows it to be kind of this receiver for things. I mean, just that movie Banshee chapter that I always talk about is all about that. So what are your thoughts on that?
So I think there's something to that. so I like, again, in straightforward, you know, full disclosure, I smoked a lot of weed in high school. I partied my way through high school. I partied my way through college and ended up with a journalism degree and a minor in religious studies. Go figure. Those are two very, had a little bit of a crisis in faith when I was first getting into college, and because it was based off of what was going on in the world, you know, 9/11 happened my senior year, the second week of my senior year of high school, and literally watched the world change. Friends of mine going off to fight wars. I wanted to be a fighter pilot until I was about in 10th grade. And really at that point it was, dude, you're color deficient and nearsighted. Like, they're never going to let you behind the air, behind the stick of an F-14. Forget it, you know? And honestly, at that point, I was more concerned with playing hockey, playing guitar, and getting laid. I mean, that was a teenage boy in high school. I mean, those are my motivations. And yeah, I smoked a lot of weed. I smoked some mushrooms with some friends. They ate mushrooms and had a much more powerful trip. I had a very interesting, experience with that when I smoked the mushrooms. Everything became very, very suggestive, and it was a very, what if this, and thinking about, hey, what if, I remember saying to a buddy of mine, hey, what if, like, when we look up at the moon, we're like really on a slide of a petri dish, and that's the top of the microscope, and the scientist is
very
looking
well
down
could
at
be
us. He's like, yeah, dude, I don't think you should do right. And he's like, yeah, dude, that's insane. And then, you know, we'd have the conversations about, like, how, what are the two things in our life that we can't ascribe meaning to? Well, it's God and love. Well, then are they the same thing? So I do think that certain substances can augment perception in individuals that are open to the experience. And what I mean by that is, if somebody's so closed off to their own feelings, and it's like the Jedi, you know, like what they say is, like, you know, reach out with your feelings. Okay. You can feel, like, people that are in tune with this stuff, Shannon, like, when they're empaths, and that's something that I discovered about myself only about 7 or 8 years ago. When you can feel other people's emotions, they can be extremely overwhelming. And so much overwhelming to the point where you literally feel drained after being with them. And I dated this girl when I had just been out of college. She was still in school, and she was friends. We had a mutual friend who had committed suicide, and we met at his funeral. Every time I hung out with her, I left drained emotionally. And it made sense because it was a very heavy, heavy, heavy time. I was coming off a breakup of my own after being with a girl that I had been with for 2.5 years, that I literally was either, all right, we're going to move in together and get a place and, you know, build the American dream. Except I broke that off. And so, you know, just stuff was real heavy. So I think there's certain things that, you know, it's like when you get your eyes checked and they go, which one's clearer, one or two? I think we all have the ability to kind of tune into that other side of what is there. It's kind of like that movie, what was it, Midnight Special. I don't know if you ever saw that. I'm trying to remember who's in it. But it was like basically this kid, he lived in this, like, kind of religious cult, and something would happen where he would, like, shoot light out of his eyes. And it turned out he was in contact with another race of beings that were on the same, that were, like, in a shared plane of existence with us, but in a different perception or a different reality. It was really kind of weird. It real transcendental when you think about it. But I definitely think that there is something that's there with the you know, like you said, the DMT or the psilocybin with the mushrooms, or even the stuff that people did with LSD back in the 60s. I mean, small enough amounts of LSD they were using to control people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I wasn't. That was the I'm blanking on the name of it now, but yeah, that's what the CIA did. And I mean, every indigenous tribe on our planet has some sort of connection to the sacred and the profane through the use of substances that are organic and naturally occurring in the earth. You know, and the religious scholars will call it the profane and the sacred to refer to the things outside of our conscious perception. You know, obviously a profane would be the evil, the sacred would be the good, or whatever, you know, because Eastern religion and Western religion don't always mix real well with the way that things, like, you're trying to explain the concept of nirvana to a bunch of college students is like, we keep trying to ascribe nirvana as being like perfection, whereas like, no, nirvana is really the absence of all ambition and everything. Like, you finally are just existing. And that's a very difficult topic for, you know, a group of college students to get. But yeah, I definitely think that there can be something onto that.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, especially and I think Ritalin that, specific, you know, because we've all heard about the LSD and the DMT and all those kinds of different trips and the mm-hmm. entities or beings that are seen then. But, and as you mentioned right out of the gate, which is true, mm-hmm. especially Ritalin, because it is mostly given to young people, it's hard to find literature.
And I think they phased it out too.
Yeah, and which is, so it's going to be almost impossible to, you know, attribute that. But it was just a thought that I had as far as, I just wonder what it chemically did to your brain, and if that aided in you being able to have these experiences or them choosing to interact with you.
You know, it could have. I mean, anything's possible. I mean, our universe is, every time that they fire up the Large Hadron Collider or whatever, they smash more particles that are smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. Whereas 15 years ago, they think that they just had electrons, atoms, and, you know, protons and neutrons, and that was it. Now they've got, you know, the Higgs boson, and they're trying to figure out what's holding it all together with the dark matter and the ether. And the interesting thing is I had kind of my own spiritual awakening when I was 19, and I had stopped taking my meds at that point because I was like, I'm 18, I'm gonna do what I want, and I'm tired of being kind of an emotional infant when it came to dealing with stuff. Because the one thing about these SSRIs, that's the kind of drug that they fall into, serotonin reuptake inhibitors, is, you know, those are your the legal meth derivatives, so to speak. I mean, because that's what I think the street name for Adderall, or not Adderall, but Ritalin was methyl. I don't remember what it was. It was something with methamphetamine in it, or amphetamines. And a lot of that stuff is treated to this day. And even, I mean, I take Adderall now because in being an adult and needing to work, like, those, I became so connected to my emotions that literally, Shannon, there was no filter between what I was feeling and what was being displayed on my physical person. Like, I was in 2010 through 2016, I worked for Enterprise Rent-A-Car. And, you know, I remember that scene from Step Brothers. Oh, they give you the tools to run your own business. No, really, they prey on young college students to pay them shit to work them to the bone, but that's a different story. And I remember if a customer came in and they were rude to me, you literally could see me turn red with how pissed I would get. And I got kind of tired of my emotions really dictating how I was being perceived. So at age 30, I decided I was going to start taking medication again to kind of, you know, as a tool to help me kind of filter through some of this stuff, because I think at that point in time, I really needed it. And because as an adult, the way that the ADHD had kind of morphed is it morphed from not being able to focus to anxiety, and not just a little anxiety, but some pretty crushing anxiety at times, where it became damn near impossible to be sure of anything. But when I was 19, that's when I made the conscious decision that I wanted to have, that I wanted to be in tune with all of this stuff again. And so what happened was my mom put me through a guided meditation, and it literally was like a door was opened. And I haven't really looked back. Like, the things just don't freak me out anymore. Oh, cool. There's somebody in the other room. That's not really somebody, you know, there's another presence here. Or when my wife is really stressed out about work, I can feel her emotion and her anxiety. I can feel other people's, like, sometimes it's just downright exhausting to be around other people because you can feel all of that. And it's a lot. It's a lot to deal with. Just, you know, I play guitar and I play hockey and like to go hike and do all this kind of fun stuff that gets my mind off it. And I have a daughter that I get to have the joys of being a father now and experience that. So it's a very interesting world that we live in. It's definitely possible that that opened a door or perhaps lifted a veil off of something that had been going on, or something that had gone on. I really don't know.
All right. Well, a couple more questions.
I had never heard that before you mentioned it, though.
Yeah. it's just, it's something that's come up. Not a whole lot, but it's there, and I think it's something at least worth considering.
It's a fair question.
All right. Well, a couple more questions we move on here.
Yes.
No, you're fine. You're doing awesome. Is there any rhyme or reason that you could come up with for the timing of your visitations?
I mean, it was all pre-puberty pretty much until, you know, pre to mid puberty, I guess. That's really the only explanation that I had for it. The interesting thing though was, so 6 or 7 years old when these dreams started. I started taking Ritalin probably when I was about 7 or 8, which would have been like second or third grade or first or second grade, something like that. There was a pretty big academic shift in terms of the type of student that I was at that time versus the student that I was before that. I was a very rambunctious, emotional, disorganized child. You know, I just remember getting a homework assignment and shoving it in my desk and nothing. And it took a couple years. And then I finally figured out, my dad was like, okay, this is how you study. And I had some really good teachers in third and fourth grade, and especially the fourth grade teachers. I'll never forget a Mr. and Mrs. Baum. And they were husband and wife, and they co-taught. So Mrs. Baum would do history, like history, English, and whatever it is, other subjects, social studies or whatever. And Mr. Baum would do math and science. And the funny thing was, is this is really when my adventure, explorative, inquisitive, scientific curiosity really started to come out, was with these teachers. And this is kind of the time where I started paying attention to Star Trek and started paying attention to Star Wars. Not so much because, oh, it's a kid and it's more stuff to blow up and break, but because it takes place in space, right? And what's out there? And, you know, I wanted to be an astronaut for a short time, and that ended when I realized the aliens were in space, and I didn't want to deal with that. So I said, okay, we won't be an astronaut anymore. But it really seemed that, like, and this is really the first time I've ever really thought about the timing of it, but it really led to kind of like an, now that I'm thinking about it, kind of just like a bigger world. instead of just like, I'm Jason, it really kind of just said, well, there's all this other things. There's all this wonder out there. And it's kind of ironic that the teacher that kind of stemmed that, Mr. Baum, is the great grandson of L. Frank Baum, who, as we know, wrote The Wizard of Oz. So it took, you know, this kid that's having, you know, dreams about being snatched by ETs to have a teacher who is the great grandson of somebody who wrote one of the most famous books of literary history, to kind of get him to open up and be okay with the things that are outside of the world. And I had never really thought about it until that time. So I, you know, I'm looking at it, Shannon, like, in a lot of ways, those dreams and experiences that I had are very influential on who I have become as a person. Because when I think about it, it teach a lot of that stuff, especially that final dream where I swung and decked the alien and hurt him. I mean, there's fear, there's violence, there's compassion, there's sensitivity, there's all these things that are there that are very important that people learn at a young age to figure out how to maneuver through the world. Because, I mean, sensitivity, compassion, understanding, even a sense of right and wrong and justice, one can make the inference from something like that, that all of a sudden you have a bigger realization that, oh, hey, there's this thing that I don't know, but I'm afraid of it. I'm going to hit it, and I hurt it, but it's hurt, and now I'm also kind of hurt because I hurt it. Well, what does that just tell me about my place in the world?
Well, what happened to the alien after you hit it? What happened? Did it go back into your bedroom? What went on?
He stood there and he looked at me. And I was looking down at him, and the top of his head went to about the top of my shoulder. You know, he was about the height of my little brother at that time. And he kind of just looked at me with a blank, almost melancholy expression on his face. Like, it felt like he was about to cry, but wasn't going to cry. And then he kind of just turned around and went back into my room, and I woke up.
And you're 100% sure that that was a dream?
I'm 100% sure that it was a dream. I don't know. They always only happened as dreams. And so I don't have a conscious memory of that ever happening, because the people that were there with me don't remember. They never had any experience.
Except
like that.
That many times and you hear about how, and this is, they're turned off.
Their
memories are erased. You know, a man or a woman will wake up and there's an entity, an alien in the bedroom, and they can see the alien, and they turn to their spouse to wake them up, and they are just non-responsive.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also the interesting point that you brought up about the Mistletech interviews that I did with him, and the fact that if they can turn people off, why would they care if he's on the sub, or why would they care if you go to a friend's house or you have a friend over? They can just shut him off. Who cares?
Well, okay, so have you seen the movie The Forgotten?
Who's in that one? I don't think I have.
Julianne Moore?
I don't think so.
Okay, so it is a very, very subtle movie about alien abduction. And it's this whole presence. The pretense is there's this woman that's played by Julianne Moore. Anthony Edwards is her husband, and they had a son who was 9 years old that perished in a plane crash along with some of his students. Okay. And one day she finds that the photo album that she had kept in his room, along with the videotapes of him at various ages in life, had been erased and were gone. And then all of a sudden her husband's like, there was never any kid. You had a miscarriage. The baby was stillborn. It turns out that she was like, no, this is real. I experienced all this. And it turns out that there was another parent that had a child that was in the same kid's class that was on a plane, and the plane went missing. He was a hockey player. He succumbed to being a drunk, and therefore, you know, it was much easier for him to forget. And what it turned out was the parents of the kids in this plane crash were an experiment by these aliens to study our emotional connection to people that are no longer present in our lives. And it also reminds me of, I read a Whitley Strieber book called The Grays back in, I don't remember what year it was, but it was like 2012, like way after all this stuff had come on and come to grips with it, where it turned out that what they wanted, the Grays want in those books, was the connection to the emotion that we as a species still have that they had lost through their own evolution and their own application and integration of artificial intelligence into their society and into their biology. And so they were literally studying our emotions to get energy from it, you know, kind of not unlike what they were doing in Monsters, Inc. with harvesting the screams and stuff like that from the kids. So to circle back around, like the missile tech said, why would they care about where I was? Because they could just erase these people's minds. What they found was in the forgotten, they couldn't get these, with parents that lost kids, they couldn't really, especially with Julianne Moore. And I think they were making the connection that with mothers, it's even stronger because mothers harbor life. And obviously, you know, it's a much stronger connection. So I think that's honestly part of it, because if you think about how strong our emotions are and how they can manipulate the perception of our reality, right? Just like fear. You can take something that is a completely, here's a perfect example, jumping off a diving board, right? Into the deep end of the swimming pool. Didn't want to do it when I was a kid. Why? Because that's the deep end and I can't stand up. But until you face that and then realize you do it and you're going to be okay, you've overcome that. But it still clouds your perception because all of a sudden you're freaked out of the deep end and you look underwater and you see a shark down there, or you think there's a shark down there. And so you don't want to go down into the deep end until you do and you realize there's no shark and everything's fine. So that's how strong our emotions can be on our perception of the physical world. Could you imagine how strong they could be in the perception of our unconscious, or even how strong those emotions that influence the physical perception that we have of our waking world, and what that perception of our waking world can bleed over into our subconscious. It's like they're probably could be very well having this constant battle going back and forth on what really is going on. Which, if, you know, I was being visited, and like I said, like I like to think that I was, it would make much more sense for them to visit me when I was asleep, than it was when I would be awake, because they know the kind of response that I would have to them when I was awake, which would be one of violence, just like in that one instance. Whereas it's easier for them to deal with me when I'm not asleep and to be in my dreams, because it's going to create less roadblocks for them later on down the road than if they were, because if we're going to be dealing with Jason for years and he grows, we're not going to be able to restrain, you know, withhold them or something like that. It could be one of those things.
I found it strange that some people just claim that, you know, their spouses or friends or whatever could be turned off. So that's why I just, you know, being alone. I mean, that's an easy one, but if they could turn people off, that's equally seems as easy. So the fact that if he had people around, or if you had people around, it wasn't going down. But okay.
One more thing. Too many people. how are they going to?
It could be.
They can't,
it could be.
They can't hide it from everybody, right?
It could be. Yeah.
I don't know, but that's a good point.
Pretty powerful. They definitely have a lot more in tune with their own brains than we do, I'll tell you that. Okay, the gold circle. Sure. Because you've had no marks found on your body, no missing time as far as you know, but you did see the UFO, the gold circle. Mm-hmm. So describe to me what that thing was like and what was it doing?
So my dad and I were flying a kite at a park. Ironically enough, it was the park that the kids rode their bikes through in E.T. It's not far from here. In fact, the neighborhood that they shot E.T. was shot in the San Fernando Valley. It's in a little area called Porter Ranch. And the park that they rode their bikes through is up there. My dad and I grew up not far from it. And we were flying a kite. And way off in the distance, he brought it to my attention. And he said, oh, I think I see something over there. I'm like, well, what is it? He goes, look, do you see that little gold? I said, Dad, I see like this gold ball. What is it? He goes, I don't know. I think it's a UFO. And it just was kind of there. And I'm like, Shannon, when we're talking about like way off in the distance, this is like probably the size of a Mylar balloon at like 500 to 1,000 feet away. Like it was tiny, but you could see it and it did not move. And I mean, there's been things that they've caught on camera that look a lot like that. Now, strangely enough, the things that I see the most often now, and my wife was with me once when we saw them, was it looks like a shooting star, but it's very, very low, and they're white. And they'll streak for a split second, and then they'll disappear. And I've seen a lot of these things, and I've always just kind of gone, it's a meteorite. Or something made it in and it was just real low. But she was with me and she saw it. I was like, in fact, she said to me in the car, did you just see that? And I'm like, yeah, I saw it. And I told her, I'm like, I think it was just a shooting star or something like that. Because I know if I start going on about that stuff, she tends to be very grounded. And if you start talking about stuff too much like that, she's a nurse. She deals with science and fact and things that you can touch and feel, and that's what she's got to go off of. So now all of a sudden you start talking about things that you can't touch, but she's okay with ghosts and all that. You know, it kind of freaks her out a little bit. But that's what I have seen the most of, is these little kind of streaking balls of light outside. I saw a black triangle once, but I was also very close to a military base in the middle of the night driving up north that flew over my car. So it could have very well been some sort of stealth aircraft.
Right.
You know, I don't know. And that's just kind of the funny thing, is it seems like the abduction phenomenon is like, oh yeah, there was a ship and it beamed me up. But the funny thing was, is the aliens never were in a ship. They transported, it was like another dimension. They were walking out of a closet or something like that. And it was just like they could open a door and be anywhere. They didn't need a ship. And, you know, I kind of asked the neighbor that. I was like, in these dreams, they're like always walking out of a closet or out of a dark room or something like that. He goes, that's, they're transporting. It's like another dimension that's being opened. And so, like, he explained it to me, and I'm like, well, that makes a lot of sense. And again, I mean, it could be a different species of ET. I don't know. Shannon, the possibilities are endless about what could be doing all that stuff, you know? And it's just, if they're visiting us now, I don't know if they are even interested or what, because, I mean, the world is a very, very bizarre place right now. So they could just say, I think they're just a little bit too volatile right now for us to be intervening or whatnot. Or they could be the ones pulling the strings. We don't really know.
I don't know. I'm kind of ready for the ID4 situation. Bring it on. see, and that,
yeah,
that just
proves...
I know
where there's some good train tunnels.
Right. That just proves that closets are really goddamn powerful places. You know, keep them clean, kiddies.
Exactly.
All right, one more point. This is more just a point, and I just want to swing back, and then we're gonna hop into ghosts and Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. Not at the same time, okay. Of course. These are separate things, people. Ghosts and Bigfoot is coming up next. But the fact that this Bonnie the psychic said, mm-hmm. called the guy, Matt, mm-hmm. called him and goes, there's a ship heading towards you. I'm sorry, but that part really got me. And that is super weird.
It is weird. And, you know, my mom, to kind of like vet some of this stuff, like I think they wanted to not write this off as me being nuts, you know, because you always see, you know, the kid being sent off to an institution when they're young or something because they're seeing ghosts or whatever. I think my parents felt that the best way to tackle this was to not make it scary. And like I said, my mom being into all of this stuff, I think she really wanted to kind of understand it and in a way legitimize it, or at least say, yeah, or lend some credibility to this person. And she's like, yeah, I talked to Bonnie. She's legit. So, and I had met her and she didn't really seem like she was somebody that was too nuts. I mean, my own intuition about people is usually pretty good.
Oh no, I just meant weird. Like it was impressive because obviously she hit the nail on the head because no matter what actually happened in you guys' homes, something did happen. Mm-hmm. And then she called Matt before. I mean, that's just, it's really cool and interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I wish that, you know, there's times where I knew that I wish that this stuff was going to happen because then I could be ready for it. You know, that's how I felt sometimes.
Welcome to the club.
All right, you're coming to me in my dreams. Just show up in person and we'll be cool. All right. Maybe they were, and maybe that was just the way that they were, you know, writing it off or making me think it was a dream. It's kind of like the owl thing, you know?
Yeah, but I do think that most of us don't really, really want to see the, you know, some shriveled little gray if it looked anything like the beings in the cocoons, but, you know, after they were cut out of the thing. I don't know,
they're
man.
Scary.
I don't know, because sleep is important, and I say it all the time. Yeah. I mean, human beings need sleep, and I totally understand where you're coming from, because I have many a time said the same thing. I'm like, come on, I just want to see it, but, you know. When you really break it down, you kind of go, well, but how is that going to affect me? And then how is that going to affect all the people around me that I love? You know?
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, I 100%, because I mean, I remember before my wife and I met, and I was in between girlfriends, I met this one girl that was an experiencer. And I was like, she was out there. Which, I mean, to be fair, who wouldn't be? And she was a recovering addict. And I mean, like everybody, that's the thing. It's like so many people are so quick to write off credibility with people because of their past that it's not fair. Like, I mean, you got to take somebody at their face value. I mean, it's like my wife says all the time, as you trust but verify, you know? And I thought me and this chick were going to hit it off. I never heard from her again. Which is fine because, you know, probably just I met my wife a few months later. But she was really the only, other than the neighbor that I had, she was the only person that had ever been an experiencer that I had actually had a conversation with. She was actually the one that kind of like introduced the whole Dolce underground base, which I'm still kind of up in the air about, but it's fun to watch things when you're bored, you know.
Well,
it's. Yeah.
Well, what do you say, Jason, that we hop into some ghostly encounters and some Bigfoot stuff, huh?
Let's do it.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little biography. The Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you you are now. Nobody knows who that is, because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our ignorance and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. Same person who a little while ago left the platform. think you are. You are linking your moments up in the chain. And this is what binds you to the wheel of birth and death. But when you know that every moment in which you are is the only moment, this comes into Zen. A master will say to somebody, now get up and walk across the room. And he comes back and he says, where are your footprints? They've gone. So where are you? Who are you? When we are asked who we are, we usually give a kind of recitation of a history.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.